All right. Good morning and welcome to the Beginner's Orientation of Alcoholics Anonymous, hosted by the New Horizons group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Joel and I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the New Horizons group. And we who serve in AA do this without any monetary payment of any sort. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. It does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The primary purpose of this panel is to introduce AA's program of recovery. I'll introduce some information and terminology that we feel would be helpful to anyone who feels they may have a problem with alcohol and might be interested in AA's program of recovery. A member of Alcoholics Anonymous will then share for about 20 minutes on what they were like, what happened, and what they're like now, having recovered from alcoholism through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. We will end this panel with a question and answer session. In AA meetings, only alcoholics participate in sharing their experience, strength, and hope. But because this is a beginner's panel, anyone is welcome to submit a question for the question and answer portion. Even if you don't feel you have a drinking problem, please send your questions to the co-host Jackie directly using the chat feature. If you have the questions for the speaker today, you may also submit them to Jackie as well. We'll do our best to get the questions answered during the question and answer session, and those questions can be sent at any point throughout the session. For your comfort, your identity will remain anonymous when the questions are asked. Please know that there is no such thing as a dumb question, as someone else may be wondering the same thing. One thing all AA members have in common is experience with alcohol. To consider of the nature of the alcoholic illness as we understand it, could Jackie please read this section more about alcoholism from the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous?
Hi, welcome everyone. I'm Jackie. I'm an alcoholic and New Horizon is my home group. My sober date is January 15th, 2020. I'm going to read out of the big book, starting on page 30, more about alcoholism. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we were like other people, or presently may be, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there have been brief recovery followed by a still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. Despite all we can say, many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe they are in this class, but every form of self-deception and experimentation, they will try to prove themselves exception to the rule, therefore non-alcoholic. If anyone who is showing inability to control his drinking can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to him. Heaven knows we have tried hard enough and long enough to drink like other people. Here are some of the methods we have tried. Drinking beer only, limiting the number of drinks, never drinking alone, never drinking in the morning, drinking only at home, never having it in the house, never drinking during business hours, drinking only at parties, switching from scotch to brandy, drinking only natural wines, agreeing to resign if ever drunk on the job, taking a trip, not taking a trip, swearing off forever with and without a solemn oath, taking more physical exercise, reading inspirational books, going to health farms and sanitariums, accepting voluntary commitment to asylums. We could increase the list ad infinitum. Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie. Only you can decide whether you want to give AA a try. We who are in AA came because we finally gave up trying to control our drinking. If you feel you're in trouble with alcohol and would like to quit drinking for good, we have three suggestions to help get you started. A big book, a sponsor, and a home group. The big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, is this guy right here. If you're anything like me, a book this big is not anything too appealing. The good news is it's only the first 103 pages that are the actual program of recovery of Alcoholics Anonymous. The rest is the experience of others with that program. So it's more, I like to say it's more like a big pamphlet than a big book with bonuses. Let's see. Feel free to ask a secretary at any AA meeting to help you get a copy of the book. They cost about $9.50. You'll also hear the book Alcoholics Anonymous most frequently referred to as the Big Book. This is what it became known because the original volume was so bulky when it was first printed. A sponsor is someone in AA who's recovered through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous outlined in the Big Book and is willing to take someone else through the same work. A home group is what where traditionally most AA members belong to one group they call their home group. This is the group where they accept service responsibilities and try to sustain friendships. And although all AA members are usually welcome at all groups and feel at home in any AA meeting, the concept of a home group has remained the strongest bond between the AA member and the fellowship. With membership comes the right to vote on issues that affect the group and might also affect AA as a whole, a process that formed the very cornerstone of AA's service structure. As with all group conscious matters, each AA member has one vote and it's voiced through the home group. You may also hear some other terms that seem confusing at first as well, such as crosstalk or outside issue. Here are some of the other AA meeting etiquette that you may find helpful. Outside issues. Experience with alcohol is the one thing AA members all have in common. It's misleading to hint or give the impression that AA solves other problems or knows what to do about drug addiction. That comes directly from the home group pamphlet. We all come in with many different problems in addition to alcohol, but our common problem is what unites us. Politics, medical advice, and religion are considered outside issues as well. We share our experience, strength, and hope as it relates to alcoholism, lest our meeting gets diverted from its primary purpose. Crosstalk. Avoidance of crosstalk is a courtesy, not a tradition. However, it is discouraged at many AA meetings. This can be confusing because its definition is changed depending on the group. Some more common descriptions of crosstalk when sharing include speaking at someone when you share instead of to the group as a whole, offering advice or an opinion when someone else is shared, using you or we statements instead of sharing in the I or me voice, offering unsolicited feedback, criticizing or debating during the meeting. To detail the solution we have found, would Jackie please read the 12 steps of AA's program of recovery in chapter 5?
Hi, I'm Jackie, alcoholic. I'm going to read the steps. Step 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to all of them. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie. I would like to now welcome our speaker, Megan, from the New Horizons Group, who's willing to share with us today. Good morning, Megan. Thank you for being here. Appreciate you. All yours.
Okay, thanks, Joel. Hi, I'm Megan, and I'm an alcoholic. I want to thank Joel again and for facilitating this orientation, and Carrie for asking me to be here. I'm so excited to be here, and I want to welcome any newcomers who are here. I have been where you are very recently. I came to New Horizons in November, and I came to the November Beginners Orientation. So it's one of my very first meetings. It's brave that you're here, and I'm so, so glad to see you. So my sobriety date is July 25th, 2020, and New Horizons is my home group. I have a sponsor. She has a sponsor, and I last weekend just finished step 5, and then, soon after did 6 and 7, and now I'm working on step 8 today. So, it's been a journey, and I just want to acknowledge that this is my first time telling my story, and I'm anxious and nervous and, also excited, and all of those things are okay because I can do this without a drink. And I could not have been able to tell you that, a year ago, definitely not a year ago, definitely not 9 months ago. I'm mostly excited, and I wanted to say that I woke up this morning with that same feeling that you get the night before you go on vacation. And I woke up at 6 a.m. and I was genuinely excited, and I was so weird. But I take it that that's a sign that I'm on the right path, and that the steps are working. And so I just wanted to share that with all of you. I'm going to start out by reading a section of the big book that when I first got the big book and started working the steps, I read it, and there are many things that resonated with me, but when I read this, I was like, okay, this describes me. It's in Bill's story. So this, you know, man in 1934, I could resonate with this. And so it's on page 8. Trembling, I stepped from the hospital, a broken man. Fear sobered me for a bit. Then came the insidious insanity of that first drink, and on Armistice Day, 1934, I was off again. Everyone became resigned to the certainty that I would have to be shut up somewhere or would stumble along to a miserable end. How dark it is before the dawn. In reality, that was the beginning of my last debauch. I was soon to be catapulted into what I like to call the fourth dimension of existence. I was to know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. Near the end of that bleak November, I sat drinking in my kitchen. With a certain satisfaction, I reflected there was enough gin concealed about the house to carry me through that night and the next day. My wife was at work, and I wondered whether I dared hide a full bottle of gin near the head of our bed. I would need it before daylight. And that last part especially describes my drinking, towards the end of my drinking, to a fault. I could not go to bed without a full glass of vodka on the side of my bed because my feet couldn't hit the ground in the morning without me taking a drink. And, it was a total progression for me to get to that place. So starting from how it began, I'm an only child, and I was a very shy girl growing up. I have two parents who love me, who are kind, good people, who don't have a history of alcoholism. There's probably untreated alcoholism peppered on both sides of the family, but my family is very brush things under the rug. And so nothing was really addressed about it growing up. I, you know, was a very good kid. I had a terrible fear of displeasing my parents, something that I still carry to this day. And I, you know, I got good grades. I didn't break the rules. I did not take a drink until I turned 18, a little after I turned 18. So I had a pretty normal life. I moved around a lot as a kid, and I got very used to figuring out how to make friends. But the important part of that is I figured out how to not get too close, because I was always moving around. So I, you know, I never really let anybody in. And that kept me being very shy and kind of a loner. So I had anxiety, and I was most comfortable by myself in my room away from people. And that carried with me until I went to college. Another thing I wanted to mention is that I grew up, because we moved around so much, my parents aren't necessarily religious, but they, the church was a safe place for us to land, to like kind of socialize me with kids. Otherwise I would have just stayed in my room. So I became very religious as a kid. And the only reason I mention that is because that has absolutely nothing to do with my higher power as I understand him today. I've had a completely different spiritual experience since finding sobriety. And, I did not carry that religion into my adulthood. And so it's been interesting, as the place I'm at now in my life, how different I view my higher power, God, I call him God, just differently from what I was raised with. So, my drinking started when I went to college, pretty normal. I remember everything about my first drink in great detail. I was in a boy's dorm room that I had a crush on, and he brought out a bottle of Southern Comfort, and I had no idea what it was. And I took a big gulp, and it hit me right away. And I was like, holy crap, this is what it feels like. And I remember running down the hall back to my room, and I was so giddy, and I was chatting with all my friends. And from very quickly after that, a couple of weeks later, I was hosting Friday afternoon shots in my room. So I went from having one drink to it just becoming a really part of my life. That was my first semester of college, and I almost failed out by the skin of my teeth. I didn't fail out. And I was coming from like my background of good grades and like never disappointing authority. That should have been a wake up call, but it wasn't. And I kept kind of barely getting by for a while. And my partying just progressed. And, but in college, it seemed normal. There was, you know, I definitely wasn't like, oh, I think I'm an alcoholic. It just, I was, you know, in a partying environment. And so that seemed pretty normal. So when I graduated college and I wanted to be a writer, I started working at a nonprofit, and at a cause that was really, you know, near and dear to my heart. And I spent all of my 20s working there. And I started drinking in the morning when I was about 22. And so because this magical power of alcohol, that's how I learned to socialize. I was no longer shy. No one would have described me as a shy person at that point, because I had this, you know, secret weapon, that gave me confidence. It gave me the ability to get out of my head. I thought, and you know, it was what I considered a secret weapon. So, when I was started work and I had to not be drunk all the time, I was no longer in college. That was, I was petrified of making a mistake, of, getting fired. It was so scary. So I remember, this was about 2009. I started making Cosmopolitans in the morning, 7:30 in the morning while I was getting ready for work. Not a super normal thing to do. But I made it pretty, and I could justify anything to myself. This was also when like Mad Men was happening, and I was like, people drink during the day, it's fine. The show Mad Men. So I justified, I was able to justify all that to myself. And I was drinking in the morning every day. I was hiding it from my roommates. So part of me knew that it wasn't a normal thing to do. Like part of me knew there, I had a reason to be embarrassed, but, I still did it. And then I would come home every day at lunch, have a couple more cocktails, go back to work. And it was like that for years. I was functioning for years. I was scared, still, but I was able to go to work, live on my, I eventually got an apartment on my own. And then I didn't have to hide it anymore. So that was great. And I was functioning. And then, you know, I saw all my friends start to build their lives, get married, start their own families, progress in their careers. And I was just kind of, I was, you know, there for all of that. I was supporting all that, but I was stuck. The idea of dating terrified me. Anytime I went on a date, I had to get hammered beforehand. And that doesn't really lead to genuine connection and forming a long lasting relationship. So I didn't have any, I didn't have one. I still haven't. And I'm 34. And I say that because it's a big part of my shame. It's a big part of what keeps me embarrassed. And it's a huge part of what kept me drinking for so long. Just being alone and kind of the older I got and the more I drank, the more alone I was. And the more I had to keep it hidden, and keep a big part of my life hidden. And the more I was just squashing down, what I wanted, who I was. And I just relied on alcohol for all of that. So I was functioning up until I was about, 29, and I just started spinning out of control. I could no longer be at work for more than a couple hours at a time before I had to, you know, have a drink. So that I was progressing in my career kind of until then, and then it slowly de-escalated. I kept getting demoted at the same organization I was working for. I had formed relationships there. They did care about me. So they didn't really know what was going on. So they kept trying to make things work with me. They gave me a lot of chances and I kept blowing them until, I lied about something that I had done, that a project that I said that I would do. And I kept lying about the status of it. And, they fired me, and my mentor fired me, and it was hard for him. I could tell he was like, I don't understand. I thought things were like, he just didn't understand. I was gaslighting everyone around me. Cause I was just drunk all the time. And, when I got fired, I was drunk when they fired me. I had no desire to change. I was just like, well, this sucks, but I needed to leave this organization anyway. And, you know, I'll figure something out. And I did get an opportunity right away to, a couple months later, at another organization in my same field in New York City, which I have no idea how I managed to get the job, or the interview. I don't even remember it, but I got it and I moved to New York. And I stayed there for 4 years, and that was the beginning of my bottom. Because in New York, I worked in Midtown. I had a fancy office. It was great, but there were bars everywhere. There was bars on every block. So I drank all the time. I drank, you know, every lunch break. I had to rotate which bars I went to. I was embarrassed that I was there every day. Same old joke, like, oh, you're drinking your lunch today. It's like, yep. I did that for a while, and it got bad, and things at work were tense. There was a lot of upheaval in the organization. And so I just was very lost, and, I had all these opportunities that I kept squandering. Like, they kept I could, you know, I was having opportunities to travel the world and I would just get drunk and I couldn't do anything. And I wasn't, it was so frustrating. And I, at the same time, I was again feeling lonelier and lonelier and more desperate. And it just, I was suffocating me. So eventually I got let go from, or politely asked to leave that job. I wasn't as harsh as the firing, but it was, they gave me some time, like a few months, but they were like, we're going to need you to leave in a couple months, but you can like, you can keep, we'll keep paying you, but like find another job, please. Which I appreciated at the time. Of course I didn't spend that time finding another job. I just kept drinking. And so, let's see, for the next 2 years, I lived alone in my apartment, depressed, and I kept pushing all lifelines away from me. My parents, who I love very much, were scared, and I didn't see them for years. I had no money. I was broke. I was constantly getting money from anywhere that I could. My friends, my family. I couldn't afford to pay my bills. I couldn't, any kind of life I had built, was gone, and I didn't know what to do. I was desperate. And that's when I just, it was 24/7. I wouldn't shower for weeks, a week at a time. Day drinking all the time, morning, noon, and night. It was just how I functioned. I didn't know a life without it. I couldn't go to the grocery store without it. I couldn't brush my teeth without it. I literally couldn't do anything. And it was, you know, that's what it got to. And it was right before my birthday, my 34th birthday this past year, and it was the pandemic. And I remember actually being excited is a really bad word to use, but I was relieved when the pandemic started, because I was like, great, I can just stay in my apartment and not have any obligation to see anyone and just drink all the time. And that's what I did. And that's when the physical effects I really started to see. It was constant. I had rashes all over my body. I was scabbed. Like, my skin was just so dry that my face was very, like, peeling all the time. I had no appetite. I could not eat. I would, you know, any money that I had would go to abuse, but I was forcing myself to, you know, eat 10 cent ramen when I could, but I couldn't. I had no appetite. I used to love cooking and entertaining, you know, and all of that. I couldn't, the idea of like making a meal was really challenging. And I was lying to everyone. I knew that people were concerned about me, but I had a really hard time accepting any help beyond me begging people for money. So one day I decided I couldn't do this anymore. I wouldn't have been able to verbalize this at the time, but I didn't want to live anymore. I knew that dying wasn't an option, killing myself wasn't an option for me. I somehow in my head that still wasn't an option, but I knew I didn't want to live anymore. And those thoughts really terrified me. So I called my parents and I said, can I please come home? And they were really excited and really supportive. And I had nothing, and I left and I moved back into my parents' house. And that was July 25th. And I said, I can't drink if I'm here. I have to change something. I just knew that I couldn't keep living how I was living, but I had no idea how to do it. So I had a friend who was sober that I, you know, had partied with a lot back in the day. And so I saw what it was, you know, how his life had changed. And, for me, that was hard. I was like, okay, I know it's possible because I see someone who's done it, and who was as bad as I was.
So I just, in the beginning, it was very, you know, I would just waking up was hard. And going through the day was hard because I had like no skills anymore. All my skills for how to do life just, I didn't have any. And I had no adult knowledge of how to live soberly. So, I clung on, not drinking. And I had some safety being at my parents' house. I told them I wasn't drinking, so it was very easy to, well, it wasn't very easy, but it was, it wasn't shoved in my face, like, and I wasn't going anywhere, so I kind of had removed all of the temptations, but I knew I could have gotten it so it was still hard, but I, after a few months of doing that, which was not really living, it was just mere, like, clinging on, I knew I needed help, and that same friend recommended AA to me. He said, you know, I think it would be a good idea for you, and I was terrified, and I was so desperate. I was hopeless. I needed help. I needed tools. I didn't know. I felt like my life had just gotten so low. I was in such a giant hole that I had no idea how to get out of it. So I looked online. I did a lot of like browsing the inner group, which I didn't know what that term was, but for, you could put in the search engine, and I wanted a friendly place. So I did newcomer, and I saw that New Horizons had a description that was so like, welcome newcomers, like we have readers, like very, very friendly. So I made a plan for, I think, 3 or 4 days to go. And every time around the same day, I would just chicken out. Finally, I went to a Thursday meeting. Thursday was an 11-step meeting that Joel was running. I remember he was so friendly. I felt so welcomed. And I kept coming back, and I felt slowly that I could start to breathe again. And things happened slowly and progressively have gotten so much better since then. I kept going, and I stayed in the background for a while, and then I heard my sponsor talk and got the courage to ask her to be my sponsor, and that really turned things around. And then I went to a business meeting. I became a member of New Horizons, started reading the Big Book, started working the steps, and I absolutely had a spiritual awakening that is still hard for me to put into words. I wish I could do a better job kind of summarizing how that went, but it's still hard to talk about. But it's that feeling of not being alone anymore that I've always wanted, that I that I use booze to get that feeling. Because if I had booze, I wasn't alone. But now I actually know what it feels like to not be alone anymore. And it's incredible. And I would never want to go back to how I was living before. So now I'm in the, I still have a road to go. You know, I'm on step, I haven't finished the steps. I'm on step eight, the amends, and I have a lot to clean up still. I have amends to make. I have a lot of financial amends to make. It's a big source of my fear and my shame, and I know that if I don't do those things, that I will absolutely drink again. And so I have a plan now. I have a program. I have support. I have my higher power. And that's why I know I'm okay. I will be okay. And like I said, I woke up this morning feeling like this was a vacation. Like I was getting ready to go to Hawaii. Like that's how excited I was to be here today. And I'm just so grateful for that. And it's a testament to this program. It's a testament to my higher power at my home group and all of like the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, 100%. Another big part that I wanted to mention was getting a service position in my home group that absolutely turned things around for me, that put me in the middle of the program. It made me feel useful. It made me feel a part of it. It made me also feel good. I know that I am a secretary on Thursday, that first meeting that I went to, I now secretary it. And I know that no matter what happens on Thursday, like if whatever happens, I know that I'll have a good day. I know that I will feel proud of myself and that I will feel useful. And that's absolutely because of that service position. And it's helped me talk to newcomers. It's helped me build relationships. I'm so grateful for that. I think that was the key for me, was starting to be of service. And I can see, you know, I can see my higher power at work, even just being here. The things that had to happen and align for me to be right here doing this, I can see that happen. I see it all the time now. And that's also a testament to this program. So, yeah, with that, I just want to say thank you again. And thank you for letting me be of service. Thank you for listening. And I appreciate you all.
Thank you, Megan. Absolutely wonderful job. That's excellent. The rest of the time will be used for question and answer. If you haven't already done so, please submit any questions you might have to Jackie. She'll be sending them directly to me. We do end this meeting directly at 11:30, but we also, our home group, New Horizons group that's been mentioned multiple times, starts directly afterwards. And I've just posted a direct link into that meeting. So if you want to copy that, most of us are just going to jump the wall and be right there. So if you want to chat with us, it's a great place to start. Jackie, do you have any questions in yet?
Yes, I do.
Perfect.
The question about attendance. How would someone get a letter of attendance?
At any group that's different, that's unique, if you're asking for this group specifically, if you throw your email into the chat, somebody will verify. Our group conscience is that we don't do that, but our individual members absolutely do. So if you throw your email in the chat, we'll get you connected to one of our individual members that's also here that'll verify that you attended today. But like, for an in general question, each group sets their own group conscience for that. Alcoholics Anonymous itself is not affiliated with any outside agency, including your parole officer, the court you're in, any sort of government, your treatment center. We're not affiliated with any of that. We will write you a letter that you can verify, but we won't send anything to them. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous's rule of, or tradition of not affiliation. You know, we'll help you on your journey, but we're not telling on you in any way, shape, or form to anybody. We don't keep attendance records. You're still on mute.
Okay. I have another question.
Okay.
How do you know if you're an alcoholic if you have issues now and then and you don't have a feeling of addictive sensation or ideas of addiction?
That's what this bad boy right here is for. It's the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It explains who alcoholics are. Part of its explanation, you know, it defines moderate drinker, heavy drinker, and real alcoholic. And you may or may not be in any part of that. We, as Alcoholics Anonymous and as individuals, we don't declare anybody else an alcoholic. It has to come from inside of you. But what is clearly spelled out in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, is it really doesn't matter how much you drank or how often you drank. It's what happens to you when you drink. And that's why we do a lot of describing what happens to the alcoholic when they drink, hopefully in an effort. I'm sorry if you can hear all of that. The dogs decided to go crazy. Hang on a second. All right. Sorry about that. So like I said, when you go through that book, your job is it's a textbook. It's not a novel. It's not something we read to get to the end of. It's something we read to extrapolate the information from. And you know, the directions early in one of the forewords is to ask yourself, yeah, that happened to me, or maybe this will work for me too, you know, but it's an inside job. We don't do it for you. So please get a hold of the book Alcoholics Anonymous and go through it. See if you find yourself. If you find yourself, you're probably one of us. If you don't, you got a great book you can give to somebody else who might have a problem.
Next question. What is a sponsor?
A sponsor is simply another member. If you notice in the 12 steps Jackie read at the end, the 12th step mentions we carry this message, you know, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, having done the 12 steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics, you know. So a sponsor is somebody who's in that position, who's made it through the 12 steps, has experienced the change, the emotional displacement and rearrangement that's sufficient to cause somebody to overcome alcoholism. And on their journey, now their job is to help other people. So, you know, though you're working, you know, you're getting started on your steps, you're also helping them complete theirs. So that's what a sponsor is, because there's a lot of places where it's easy to get caught in the woods in some of these directions, and where it's critically important to have another experienced member to say, no, this is how we do it. You know, there's a sponsor is simply that, you know, somebody who's able has taken the 12 steps and is able to help you. These aren't marriages. You know, if you grab a hold of somebody and things don't work out for whatever reason, you can always grab somebody else. We generally only have one sponsor at a time, because I know if you're anything like me, if I had multiple sponsors, you know, and I wanted to do something that was self-will, I would just keep changing how I phrased it from different sponsors till I got one that would agree with my crazy. So we have one sponsor at a time, but that sponsor can change at any time. You know, I had a man let me go as his sponsor just yesterday because our time schedules just couldn't match up. He's in Spain, I'm in the United States, and it was just too difficult for us to find a time that works together. You know, there's no harm there. It was just simply a matter of logistics. And you know, so like I said, the most critical thing, get one. Get started with anyone. Get started with anyone. If you find out it doesn't work, that's fine. Move on to somebody else. But in the meantime, get started. One of the things I did is I just asked somebody I saw that was always at the same meetings, had a ton of time. I asked him, I said, you know these guys better than I do, and I don't have time to wait. Will you tell me who I need for a sponsor? And he gave me a sponsor. So there's no wrong way to do it other than not doing it.
That's the second part of this question, Joel, is how does someone get a sponsor?
Yeah, it's as simple as asking. In our home group, like I said, we're going to jump the wall right after this at 11:30. And there's our meeting doesn't start till 12. So there's a half hour of time where we just chat with each other. And part of that is getting connected with one of our newcomer reps. And our newcomer reps give out paperwork, and it's digital. But it has a list of phone numbers, which are people you can contact. It also has a list of sponsors, which are people who have completed the 12 steps and are willing to sponsor people from our home group. So we do some of that work for you. We call up, because there's a lot of people who are willing to sponsor. Doesn't mean they're qualified, and it doesn't necessarily mean they're capable, but they're willing. You know, and this is one of the, you know, we try and help you get to somebody who's actually completed the 12 steps directly. So please come to our meeting early if you want one right now, which is the best time to get one is right now. And we'll get you that phone list and start having conversations with the folks. See if you know, the requirement of that sponsor matches with what you're capable of doing, and take it from there. So again, the link is in the chat box. Oh, you know what? I think I sent that direct. I'm going to put that in there again right now, because I noticed I actually sent that to one member instead of to everybody. There it is. Anybody can click right on that. As soon as this meeting is over, it'll take you right to that next meeting.
Okay. Do I have to do the steps?
No, you absolutely don't. What we say is our steps are suggested. It's the only suggestion we've got. But they are a suggestion. You know, there are no requirements to do anything. You know, unfortunately, you know, we can't make you do anything, and we can't beat this program into somebody, or else there'd be a lot more black and blue sober folks in meetings. It just doesn't work that way. But I like one of our pamphlets describes that, we can take the steps cafeteria style. We can take them wholeheartedly, or we can take nothing at all. But it's only through doing the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous that makes you a part of Alcoholics Anonymous. Other than that, you're just visiting. You're just, it's a spectator sport until you start doing it. And so that's where my membership in Alcoholics Anonymous truly takes root, is by having something to share in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is how the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is actually working in my life. But no, nothing is not mandatory. But it's a kind of dopey analogy, but they say it's a suggestion, like when you jump out of an airplane with a parachute on your back, it's suggested you pull the ripcord. It's not a requirement.
And how long does it take to do the steps?
That's entirely up to your sponsor. Like, they are the ones who tell you what is on the at bat, what you're doing right now, and what comes up next. And this is where, we early on, our thinking is a very, very dangerous place. Alcoholic insanity is not something that we get drunk and get crazy. Alcoholic insanity is we stop drinking and our life gets crazy and we make crazy decisions. So through the first 9 steps of recovery, it's critical that I put my best thinking to aside and I follow the directions of my sponsor. That sponsor will teach me how to develop a relationship with my higher power, mine, not his. It will teach me who I am through the inventory process. It'll teach me how to clean up the wreckage of my past through 8 and 9. Once I've done those things, once I've got a relationship with my higher power, I truly understand who I am and the nature of my person, and I've cleaned up the wreckage of my past, I'm promised in the 11th step that my thinking will have recovered and I can begin to rely upon my thinking. So, but through that process, till I get to that point, I had best follow the directions. Some people can whip through them. Some people need to take significant amounts of time. I've never sponsored 2 people the same way in my entire life. I forgot to mention this. My sobriety day is July 23rd of the year 2000. I'm coming up on 21 years of sobriety in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've sponsored a lot of people. But I've never sponsored 2 people the exact same way because, we're all a different sick, So there is no patent answer to that. A lot of it is how much work are you willing to do and how fast are you willing to get it done?
Okay. Next question was, when does the New Horizons group meet?
At this point, 7 days a week in Zoom. That's changing soon. We're going to be cutting back to just Monday through Thursday. But as of right now, every day at 12 noon Pacific time. And that Zoom code or the link I posted in the chat will get you to all 7 of those meetings. Every day is an open meeting except for Sunday. Sundays are closed, which simply means you have to be able to identify as an alcoholic or somebody with a problem with alcohol to attend. The rest of those meetings, anybody's welcome to show up and observe. If you're an alcoholic, you can participate. If you're not, you're welcome to observe those meetings.
Question. Is AA just for people who should quit drinking or control drinking?
Alcoholics Anonymous does not speak to control drinking in any way, shape, or form. What we recommend is complete abstinence but that's for alcoholics. Heavy drinkers may in fact be able to moderate. I don't know one because I'm not one. Personally, I've never wanted to. The book talks about the alcoholic's dilemma is trying to control and enjoy his drinking. That's the paradox, because when I'm controlling my drinking, I'm not having fun. I'm not enjoying that drinking. I'm thinking that, okay, this is number 2. I've only got 1 more and I only have 5 hours to get it. It's this constant math equation. And when I'm enjoying my drinking, all bets are off. There is no control. It's I'm flung by the seat of my pants and I hope I don't end up in jail. So, you know, for real alcoholics, there truly is no controlling your drinking. And again, this all, everything I say, if it can't be directly related to this book or any of our other texts, you know, it can be disregarded, but I work really hard to make sure anything I say can be directly related out of this book. So please, that's all, that stuff comes right out of here. And we highly recommend you get it. The first 47 pages are very good at explaining the nature of the alcoholic illness and why complete abstinence is the only thing we found effective for alcoholics of our type.
Next question. What is service work?
Service work is simply any work you do for your home group. And then as time progresses, there's also a service structure where, you know, we work to be in service to AA as a whole. But it's a technique of getting out of myself. You know, part of my alcoholic illness is selfishness and self-centeredness. And there is no, I don't get to wish that away. I don't get to think that away. I've got to do something to change that. And what I do is do for others. So, you know, in-person meetings, that can be making the coffee, cleaning the coffee cups, greeting people, being a secretary, doing what I'm doing right now. This is service work. I'm facilitating this meeting to where there's somebody who has these answers, familiar enough with the big book to actually be competent enough to answer these questions. This isn't something you can do at 6 months of sobriety. You know, this is something, you know, there's a multitude of different things that need to be done for an AA group to function. You know, we need to have a treasurer. We need to have business meetings. We need to have, you know, a recording secretary. Not everybody can do everything. So we take the things that I'm a talker. This is a perfect service position for me because I can talk. I don't balance my checkbook. I never have. You probably don't want me to be your account, your treasurer. I've never taken notes. I've got a bachelor's degree in nuclear physics, and I never took notes in a single class I ever took. So I can't be your recording secretary. I'll tell you what I think I remember, but I'm not going to have detailed notes. So there's just certain things that I'm good at, certain things I'm bad at. So I go to my business, my home group's business meetings, and listen for the things that I think that I wouldn't be an utter failure at. And I raise my hand to be of assistance.
Okay, next question. I'm not sure I'm an alcoholic. Can I still attend meetings?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's no better place for you, to be honestly. If you have that lurking question, meetings are a perfect place to come and listen. And just like the way we go through the big book to try and extrapolate information, it's not a novel. You know, we go through it. I have my guys go through it with a pen or highlighter, some sort of marking device. So when they run across something they relate to, they mark it. So, you know, mentally, we do the same thing in meetings. As I go to meetings with the goal, I used to tell myself, I'm a pearl collector. I'm here to collect the pearls that are offered today. And that's how I listen for the similarities. I listen to the things that apply to me. And I'll find them. Because I tell you one thing for absolute certain. If you listen for the differences, you'll find them any day of the week. Every single person shares will share something that's different. And it'll be something I can hang my hat on and say, ah, see, I'm not like that. But when I change my focus, and I'm listening for the similarities, they become more and more apparent. And that, it's a technique that we utilize in multiple arenas in this program. But a great place to start is right there to, you know, go to meetings and listen for those similarities. And, you know, if you are one of us, you may find it, you know. And again, also go to those meetings and pick up this book. You know, the book was written in 1939. So we're not sticking stuff in there to manipulate you. You know, and that's the kind of stuff I would have suspected. I was always looking for the angle. What's the manipulation? But if these guys are telling their story in 1939 and they're describing me to a T, this kid drunk in the 90s, you know, clearly I'm one of them. So meetings and the book, same thing. Look for the similarities. Look for the things that apply to you, not the things that don't.
Someone heard reference to Bill and Bill W. Can you tell us who that is?
Bill W. was one of the two founding members of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was the one who originally developed most of these ideas. Dr. Bob was the first person he was able to sell on these ideas. The two of them got to work and created Alcoholics Anonymous. That is a dramatic oversimplification of the extraordinary amount of work of an extraordinary amount of people, better described in our book, AA Comes of Age. You know, there was a lot more to it than that. But Bill Wilson was the flashpoint. You know, he was going to some of the organizations of the day that were there trying to help everybody. It was called the Oxford Group. And he was working with the Oxford Group on a spiritual malady. And he was also working with some physicians at a renowned hospital for the treatment of alcohol and drug addiction. And he was the one who was able to merge those ideas and eventually develop what became Alcoholics Anonymous. He's also the primary author of this book. He's the one, you know, granted, he took in a tremendous amount of feedback from the first near 100 members, and as well as some of the doctors that he had worked with over the time. But yeah, Bill W. is essentially our founder, and his partner, Dr. Bob. Hope that clears that up. There are also Bill's story is the very first one in the book. It's the first chapter. Dr. Bob's is the first one after the 164 pages of instructions, Dr. Bob's Nightmare. So there you can read in detail about the two of them in the big book, as well as there's other books fully about them. Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers is all about Dr. Bob's journey, and Pass It On is all about Bill's. But there's a tremendous amount of AA conference group literature about the history of Bill Wilson.
Joel, we're all caught up with the chat questions.
Let's see if I got any that sent to me. Some of the main pass the questions that we get here an awful lot also is what is a home group? And there are two very separate and distinct things in Alcoholics Anonymous. One's called a home group, one's called a meeting. Meetings are simply a place where drunks group up on a regular basis to talk about it. You know, they're not necessarily involved in that service structure in AA. They're just a location where alcoholics come together to discuss alcoholism and hope, you know, in the best of situations, recovery from alcoholism, Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, etc. A home group is an organized group that meets on a regular basis and is also involved in the service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous. That means they have intergroup reps, general service reps, their business meetings regularly vote on the issues of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, we get the questions from New York. We send our responses back to New York. It's called the three legacies of Alcoholics Anonymous. We've heard a lot about the steps today, which is what the individual's path to recovery. There's also the AA traditions, which is what makes those groups available and healthy, and the concepts, which keeps Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole running. And all three of those legacies are what in a well-run, healthy home group, all three legacies, all three legs of that triangle are firmly in place. And that's one of the reasons we tend, you know, at this group, this outside committee or panel or workshop or whatever you want to call it, this isn't an AA meeting because people aren't really sharing. We don't have the meeting before the meeting and all that other stuff. But it's hosted by the Three Legacies Group, New Horizons. That meeting is about to start. We open a half hour early for fellowship. We stay late to greet with people. We hold a one-hour meeting, but there's also activities as soon as that meeting ends all the way till our next meeting meets. You know, that's the difference between our home group and just a meeting. You know, we function around the clock. We have service members that are working, and it's a great thing to be a part of. There's a reason, you know, Megan was able to get a hold of service opportunities and, you know, we look out for the newcomers. We're a functional entity, and I highly recommend, like I said, you jump the wall. And I'm going to Carrie just posted all of the meeting ID and the password into the chat. We're going to have a very sharp close right at 11:30. And since it's 11:29 at this point, I'm going to thank you all for joining us. It's been a pleasure to answer your questions. They've been great today. And I'm going to have Jackie take us out with a serenity prayer. And like I said, there will be a fairly hard close. If you go to the three dots by the chat, you can copy the chat. That way, all of this information will still be available to you once this window closes. Again, there's a direct link to the meeting. So please do that. And Jackie, if you would, take us out with the serenity prayer.
Thank you. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you.
Well, yeah, thank you, Jackie, for your help. Thank you, Megan, for doing an absolutely stellar job. And I hope to see you guys on the other side of the wall. Thank you again.